Chapter 36. Whatever may have been the language of Harry's letter to the colonel, the information it conveyed was condensed or expanded, one or the other, from the following episode of his visit to New York. He called, with official importance in his mien, at No. Wall Street, where a great gilt sign beckoned the presence of the headquarters of the A. Columbus River Slack Water Navigation Company. He entered and gave a dressy porter his card, and was requested to wait a moment in a sort of anteroom. The porter returned in a minute, and asked whom he would like to see? The president of the company, of course. He is busy with some gentlemen, sir, says he will be done with them directly. That a copper plate card with engineer-in-chief on it should be received with such tranquility as this, annoyed Mr. Brierly not a little. But he had to submit. Indeed, his annoyance had time to augment a good deal, for he was allowed to cool his heels a full half hour in the ante-dash room before those gentlemen emerged, and he was ushered into the presence. He found a stately dignitary occupying a very official chair behind a long green morocco-covered table, in a room with sumptuously carpeted and furnished, and well garnished with pictures. Good morning, sir. Take a seat, take a seat. Thank you, sir, said Harry, throwing as much chill into his manner as his ruffled dignity prompted. We perceive by your reports and the reports of the chief superintendent that you have been making gratifying progress with the work. We are all very much pleased. Indeed? We did not discover it from your letters which we have not received. Nor by the treatment our drafts have met with which were not honored, nor by the reception of any part of the appropriation, no part of it having come to hand. Why, my dear Mr. Brierly, there must be some mistake. I am sure we wrote you, and also Mr. Sellers, recently when my clerk comes he will show copies letters informing you of the 10% assessment. Oh, certainly, we got those letters. But what we wanted was money to carry on the work, money to pay the men. Certainly, certainly, true enough, but we credited you both for a large part of your assessments, I am sure, that was in our letters. Of course that was in, I remember that. Ah, very well then. Now we begin to understand each other. Well, I don't see that we do. There's 2 months' wages due the men, and how? Haven't you paid the men? Paid them? How are we going to pay them when you don't honor our drafts? Why, my dear sir, I cannot see how you can find any fault with us. I am sure we have acted in a perfectly straightforward business way. Now let us look at the thing a moment. You subscribed for 100 shares of the capital stock at $1,000 a share, I believe? Yes, sir, I did. And Mr. Sellers took a like amount? Yes, sir. Very well. No concern can get along without money. We levied a 10% assessment. It was the original understanding that you and Mr. Sellers were to have the positions you now hold, with salaries of $600 a month each, while in active service. You were duly elected to these places, and you accepted them. Am I right? Certainly. Very well. You were given your instructions and put to work. By your reports it appears that you have expended the sum of $9,610 upon the said work. 2 months' salary to you two officers amounts altogether to $2,400, about 1/8 of your 10% assessment, you see, which leaves you in debt to the company for the other 7/8 of the assessment, viz., something over $8,000 apiece. Now instead of requiring you to forward this aggregate of $16,000 or $17,000 to New York, the company voted unanimously to let you pay it over to the contractors, laborers from time to time, and give you credit on the books for it. And they did it without a murmur too, for they were pleased with the progress you had made, and were glad to pay you that little compliment, and a very neat one it was too, I am sure. The work you did fell short of $10,000, a trifle. Let me see $9,640 from $20,000 salary $2 semicolon 400 added IS. The balance due the company from yourself and Mr. Sellers is $7,960, which I will take the responsibility of allowing to stand for the present, unless you prefer to draw a check now, and thus, confound it, do you mean to say that instead of the company owing us $2,400, we owe the company $7,960? Well, yes. And that we owe the men and the contractors nearly $10,000 besides? Owe them? Oh, bless my soul, you can't mean that you have not paid these people? But I do mean it. The president rose and walked the floor like a man in bodily pain. His brows contracted, he put his hand up and clasped his forehead and kept saying, oh, it is too bad, too bad, too bad. Oh, it is bound to be found out. Nothing can prevent it. Nothing. Then he threw himself into his chair and said, my dear Mr. Brierson, this is dreadful, perfectly dreadful. It will be found out. It is bound to tarnish the good name of the company. Our credit will be seriously, most seriously impaired. How could you be so thoughtless? The men ought to have been paid, though it beggared us all. They ought they? Then why the devil my name is not Brierson? By the way, why the mischief didn't the compa? Why what in the nation ever became of the appropriation? Where is that appropriation? If a stockholder may make so bold as to ask. The appropriation? That paltry $200, $000, do you mean? Of course, but I didn't know that $200, $000 was so very paltry. Though I grant, of course, that it is not a large sum, strictly speaking. But where is it? My dear sir, you surprise me. You surely cannot have had a large acquaintance with this sort of thing. Otherwise you would not have expected much of a result from a mere initial appropriation like that. It was never intended for anything but a mere nest egg for the future, and real appropriations to cluster around. Indeed? Well, was it a myth, or was it a reality? Whatever become of it? Why, the matter is simple enough. A congressional appropriation costs money. Just reflect, for instance, a majority of the House committee, say $10, $000 apiece, $40,000. A majority of the Senate committee, the same each, say $40, $000. A little extra to one or two chairmen of one or two such committees, say $10, $000 each, $20,000, and there's $100,000 of the money gone, to begin with. Then, seven male lobbyists, at $3, $000 each, $21, $000, one female lobbyist, $10,000. A high moral congressman or senator here and there, the high moral ones cost more, because they give tone to a measure, say 10 of these at $3, $000 each, is $30,000. Then a lot of small fry country members who won't vote for anything whatever without pay, say 20 at $500 apiece, is $10, $000. A lot of dinners to members, say $10, $000 altogether. Lot of gimcracks for congressmen's wives and children, those go a long way. You can't spend too much money in that line. Well, those things cost in a lump, say $10, $000 along there somewhere. And then comes your printed documents, your maps, your tinted engravings, your pamphlets, your illuminated show cards, your advertisements in 150 papers at ever so much a line, because you've got to keep the papers all light, or you are gone up, you know. Oh, my dear sir, printing bills are destruction itself. Ours so far amount to, let me see, 10, 52, 22, 13, and then there's 11, 14, 33. Well, never mind the details. The total in clean numbers puts up $118, $254.442 thus far. What? Oh, yes indeed. Printing's no bagatelle, I can tell you. And then there's your contributions, as a company, to Chicago fires and Boston fires, and orphan asylums and all that sort of thing. At the list, you see, with the company's full name and $1,000 set opposite great card. Sir, one of the finest advertisements in the world. The preachers mention it in the pulpit when it's a religious charity. One of the happiest advertisements in the world is your benevolent donation. Ours have amounted to $16,000 and some cents up to this time. Good heavens. Oh, yes. Perhaps the biggest thing we've done in the advertising line was to get an officer of the U.S. government of perfectly Himalayan official altitude to write up our little internal improvement for a religious paper of enormous circulation. I tell you, that makes our bonds go handsomely among the pious poor. Your religious paper is by far the best vehicle for a thing of this kind, because they'll lead your article and put it right in the midst of the reading matter. And if it's got a few scripture quotations in it, and some temperance platitudes and a bit of gush here and there about Sunday schools, and a sentimental snuffle now and then about God's precious ones, the honest hard-handed poor, apostrophe, it works the nation like a charm, my dear sir, and never a man suspects that it is an advertisement. But your secular paper sticks you right into the advertising columns, and of course you don't take a trick. Give me a religious paper to advertise in, every time, and if you'll just look at their advertising pages, you'll observe that other people think a good deal as I do, especially people who have got little financial schemes to make everybody rich with. Of course I mean your great big metropolitan religious papers that know how to serve God and make money at the same time. That's your sort, sir, that's your sort. A religious paper that isn't run to make money is no use to us, sir, as an advertising medium, no use to anybody in our line of business. I guess our next best dodge was sending a pleasure trip of newspaper reporters out to Napoleon. Never paid them a cent. Just filled them up with champagne and the fat of the land, put pen, ink, and paper before them while they were red hot, and bless your soul, when you come to read their letters you'd have supposed they'd been to heaven. And if a sentimental squeamishness held one or two of them back from taking a less rosy view of Napoleon, our hospitalities tied his tongue, at least, and he said nothing at all, and so did us no harm. Let me see, have I stated all the expenses I've been at? No, I was near forgetting one or two items. There's your official salaries. You can't get good men for nothing. Salaries cost pretty lively. And then there's your big high-sounding millionaire names stuck into your advertisements as stockholders, another card, that, and they are stockholders too, but you have to give them the stock and non-accessible at that, so they're an expensive lot. Very, very expensive thing, take it all around, is a big internal improvement concern, but you see that yourself, Mr. Briarman, you see that yourself, sir. But look here, I think you are a little mistaken about its ever having cost anything for congressional votes. I happen to know something about that. I've let you say your say, now let me say mine. I don't wish to seem to throw any suspicion on anybody's statements, because we are all liable to be mistaken. But how would it strike you if I were to say that I was in Washington all the time this bill was pending? And what if I added that I put the measure through myself? Yes, sir, I did that little thing. And moreover, I never paid a dollar for any man's vote, and never promised one. There are some ways of doing a thing that are as good as others which other people don't happen to think about, or don't have the knack of succeeding in, if they do happen to think of them. My dear sir, I am obliged to knock some of your expenses in the head, for never a cent was paid a congressman or senator on the part of this navigation company. The president smiled blandly, even sweetly, all through this harangue, and then said, "Is that so?" Every word of it. Well, it does seem to alter the complexion of things a little. You are acquainted with the members down there, of course, else you could not have worked to such advantage. I know them all, sir. I know their wives, their children, their babies. I even made it a point to be on good terms with their lackeys. I know every congressman well, even familiarly. Very good. Do you know any of their signatures? Do you know their handwriting? Why, I know their handwriting as well as I know my own. I've had correspondence enough with them, I should think. And their signatures, why, I can tell their initials, even. The president went to a private safe, unlocked it and got out some letters and certain slips of paper. Then he said, now here, for instance, do you believe that that is a genuine letter? Do you know this signature here? And this one? Do you know who those initials represent and are they forgeries? Harry was stupefied. There were things there that made his brain swim. Presently, at the bottom of one of the letters he saw a signature that restored his equilibrium. It even brought the sunshine of a smile to his face. The president said, that one amuses you. You never suspected him? Of course I ought to have suspected him, but I don't believe it ever really occurred to me. Well, 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 how did you ever have the nerve to approach him, of all others? Why, my friend, we never think of accomplishing anything without his help. He is our mainstay. But how do those letters strike you? They strike me dumb. What a stone-blind idiot I have been. Well, take it all around, I suppose you had a pleasant time in Washington, said the president, gathering up the letters. Of course you must have had. Very few men could go there and get a money bill through without buying a single. Come now, Mr. President, that's plenty of that. I take back everything I said on that head. I'm a wiser man today than I was yesterday, I can tell you. I think you are. In fact, I am satisfied you are. But now I showed you these things in confidence, you understand. Mention facts as much as you want to, but don't mention names to anybody. I can depend on you for that, can't I? Oh, of course. I understand the necessity of that. I will not betray the names. But to go back a bit, it begins to look as if you never saw any of that appropriation at all. We saw nearly $10,000 of it and that was all. Several of us took turns at log rolling in Washington, and if we had charged anything for that service, none of that $10,000 would ever have reached. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.